You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
That it is. Honestly, why does it always have to be a circus in Queens? 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Carlin, you, full show. You and me, 3 hours to get reacquainted, during which we'll discuss the go-to guy for the New York Knicks. We'll discuss Adam Cromie, who we will discuss the Jets and the need, not the possibility, the need to play Mike White, and we begin with the Mets. We'll also get to the Yankees and what Brian Cashman had to say here in the last little while in just a bit. But we're starting right now with the Mets. By the way, you can hit us up on Twitter, at Chris Carlin, on Instagram, and over on TikTok, That Guy Carlin. Listen, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. I'm going to let Sandy Alderson anger you himself.
We are continuing the process, and we are continuing to talk to people. I don't want to give you a timeline. We've all already blown through what most people would say is a reasonable timeline, but we'll see what happens toward the end of the week. I will say this about the search. We've talked to a lot of people. Probably half the people are going to be here today. In some cases, you know, we haven't gotten permission. In some cases, I think people are comfortable where they are, whether it be a family situation or something professional. And in other cases, I think admittedly, there's a reluctance to come to New York, but I think it's mostly about New York and not about, you know, Steve or the organization or what have you. It's a big stage. Some people would just prefer to be elsewhere.
You know, this has never been a thing really before. Why is it the 2 years in a row when you can't find a president of baseball operations? And that was the plan last year. That was the plan this year. And you're already talking about it being the plan next year when you've gone 0-2 so far. And then you've moved on. And then it's, let's get a GM. And nobody really wants to interview for the job, or nobody wants to let you interview their people for the job. But it can't possibly have anything to do with Sandy Alderson still being present. It can't possibly have anything to do with an owner that is a wild card right now, at best. At best. No. It has to be that the New York fans are entirely too demanding. And it's too tough of a place. So many people don't want to deal with it. Are we drunk? Honestly. How stupid do you think we are? Was that an actual discussion that took place prior to getting asked questions today, prior to meeting the media? Did Sandy huddle with Mets PR execs and say, listen, how are we going to attack this when I get asked why nobody wants to come here, and it has nothing to do with me, and it has nothing to do with Steve, and it has nothing to do with Brim? What are we going to blame it on? Let me think about that. Blame it on New York City. Blame it on how tough it is to be here. And for me, doesn't bother me. I'm more than excited to be in New York City. Some other people, though, just bothers them. Are you kidding me? How insulting can you be? How stupid do you think we are? Look, I get it. You want to protect the owner? That's the smart thing to do if you're Sandy. You want to take any blame away from yourself and absolve yourself? That's certainly the smart thing to do. But you can't sit here and tell me it's New York, it's our fault. You can't do that. Because plenty of other people have been more than willing to come here to run organizations and to deal with the pressure. But now, all of a sudden, it's a major issue with this one team in particular? That's dumb. That's insulting, and that's absurd. Stop it. Just stop it. Let me take you back to last year. Let me credit Joel Sherman for this the other day. Joel wrote about what the Mets were saying a year ago when Steve Cohen took over, and what they're saying now. And one of the things that Sandy Alderson said when they were talking about hiring a president of baseball operations last year was simply this: I do not expect to be making final decisions on anything. I would expect to have a seat at the table, but I'm not making decisions. Dude, if you don't want to be in charge of any baseball at all and you just want to be on the business side, honestly, why are you still here? Like, at this point in your career, I think it's safe to say you've done enough where you don't have to be here. And I'm somebody that has been a Sandy fan for my career, or for the most part during his time here. But honestly, this has to stop. This protecting of Brynn, which you hear about behind the scenes, has to stop. Look, Brynn Alderson, his son, may be a terrific baseball exec. He may be a terrific guy. All of it doesn't matter. What matters is perception. Perception is reality everywhere. And if you don't want to admit that, then you are just turning a blind eye to it. So when the perception is that your son has to be here and be part of the decision-making process, that's an issue for people that might want the job. When the perception is that you're still going to have your hand in everything and you have come out and said it, whether or not we keep saying you don't want anything to do with running the baseball side, but I expect to have a seat at the table, this is 2 years in a row. We're going to get a president of baseball operations, and now we're not because nobody wants the job. Let's try to get a GM. Well, wait, we don't have one yet. I'll get to the latest candidate here in a little bit, but this is just remarkably dumb. Remarkably dumb. Sandy's hiring record is a problem. Why isn't that being set up as a flare? You're blaming New York City. That's not the brightest thing to do publicly. It's not our fault. It's New York's fault. Too much pressure. Too much pressure. Say this for Cashman. You know, even though he's become the fifth Steinbrenner over the years, he's never complained about that. And there was a period where there was no more pressurized situation, pressurized job than Brian Cashman running the Yankees in professional sports. Never once said a word. New York's too much. We know that it's too much for some people. That's not why they're all turning you down, brother. They're turning you down because they don't trust you and they don't trust him. Now, I think it's probably a little bit unfair to not trust the owner at this point, considering he just got here. And there's not a whole lot of precedent. And he's going to spend the money. And he's going to do what you need to do. If he's a pain in the ass to work for, okay, you'll find out. But it's not anything to do with New York. Stop insulting our intelligence. Lots of Sandy Alderson Mets talk so far. Let's hit Buddha in the Bronx. What's up, baby? What's going on tonight?
Hey, Cat Daddy, this is a really good topic. It's not as simple as it seems on the surface, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen, it was not smart for Sandy. But also wasn't New York tough for him to say what he said and the way he said it. But in reality, there's some merit of truth to what he's saying, and it's not based on the fans. Now, you know, when you look at New York versus, I would say, like, the Midwest and the West, in terms of lifestyle, taxes, family lifestyle, weather, it's a little harder here. And when I say that, I'm not saying that, say that's not something to embrace, but I think that that does limit the playing field in terms of the candidates that you could bring in to be your GM. Like, as you always spoke about with Joe Douglas, there was a reason why he took the 6-year deal. Now, I'm not in a big favor of that, but as time has progressed, and I have to really, like, take myself out of it, not just as a Jets fan, you know, because I could be crazy with that, but when I look at the situation that you dealt with, specifically with the Jets and the Mets, and take the other teams out of it, I can see why you were coming here and you know, and I don't want to use Phil Jackson as an example because he was horrible, but there's been a segment of where you have to overpay somebody to come in to try to clean up a long-standing mess. And, you know, when you look at, say, like the Jets, for instance, to use that as an example, I think it's clear that Woody Johnson was involved in deciding who was going to be picked at quarterback. I agree with you, as I treated you last night. I mean, I've been speaking this a long time ago. I mean, I always like Fields better than Wilson for a couple of reasons, but that's neither here nor there. But what happens is the reason why Sal is growing on me as a coach is because he said, I'm going to play whoever's playing best right now. For him to do that, he's going against the grain. So now to spin it back to the Mets, for them to bring somebody in here to kind of deal with Cohen and then also deal with being the little brother to the Yankees, that's going to take a special type of an individual. And I think some of the people who have turned the job down, it's been easy to blame it on just Cohen, but there's a lot of things that are involved with making those kind of choices.
I don't doubt, Buddha, that there is a faction of candidates that would not want to deal with New York. I don't think it's the majority of candidates. I don't think that's the primary reason why they have gotten turned down as much as they have. For people that don't even want to go through the interview process, if that makes sense, like, think about that. Even if you don't have interest in the job and you're a younger executive who's trying to get somewhere, you at least go through the process of the interview for the experience of it. And you don't sit there and tell them, well, I don't want to deal with New York, so I'm not coming here. What they're doing is trying to cover up for the owner right now, which, let's be fair, okay? What indication is there after 1 year that Steve Cohen is going to be a nightmare to work for? Are we going off of what we're seeing, what we've heard about .72? Is that what we're basing all of our decisions on? Because it's not fair and it's not right. If they don't want to work for an owner that nobody knows very much about, that's on them. To combat the Joe Douglas point for a second, the 6-year contract wasn't necessarily because of coming to New York or working for the Jets. It had a lot to do with wanting to understand that this is going to take a lot of time to try to turn back around.
But both of those points you just said, the two last points you just said, doesn't that sort of kind of explain what I'm talking about? All right, the Jets have been a bad organization.
I don't doubt that there's truth to people not wanting to come to New York. I just don't want to hear Sandy Alderson using it as an excuse when I don't think it's the primary reason for most of the guys they've been turned down by.
He shouldn't say it. But what I'm saying, though, is like, Chris, to be honest with you, like you just said, I don't know if it's so much that Cohen, there's more to it than that. Now, for him to say it is not the right thing to do, that doesn't make him look good, and it's not really good in terms of trying to recruit somebody to come here, but there's truth in that.
Listen, Buddha, I'm with you on that. Thanks for the call. There is absolutely truth in it. I'll never deny that. Some people are not meant to be executives here. Scott Layden was not meant to be an executive to run the New York Knicks. I mean, there is no doubt that's the case. What I'm saying is, this is not why the Mets are getting turned down right now. There may be one or two guys that feel that way. This is not why the Mets are getting turned down right now. It's just not. That, of course, the Richard warning. If you should need a break or something to drink or a bathroom run, now is your time. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Chris. Chris, you know, the NFL has a Shohan Ohtani, and nobody ever mentions him. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I assume that you're talking about somebody like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, of course. That guy's about the 10th best running back in the NFL, and he's maybe the 5th best quarterback. Wouldn't he rate just as high as Ohtani at 2 positions?
But the Ohtani thing, I would compare it more if you had somebody that was playing offense and defense, but I get what you're saying. I understand it.
He holds 2 positions down pretty good to me.
No, listen, I get it. But, you know, Ohtani's job is to get people out and to drive in runs. If that was somebody that was playing defense as well as offense, it would be a little bit more similar.
Yeah, you could say that technically. You know, Chris, I'm watching the Jets last Thursday night, and I'm going to watch this Sunday. I don't really care if they win or lose. I'm just watching Mike White. That's it. I'd rather the Jets lose and Mike White throws for 400 yards than the Jets win and the kid throws for 120 yards and three picks. I want to see this kid play great. And, Chris, I don't remember the last time in 60 years. I do remember, and I'll tell you who. Last time I remember watching a guy, not caring how the team did, just watching him for entertainment value. You know who? It was Pete Maravich when he was at LSU.
Pete Maravich didn't care if the team won or lost. That's true.
Correct. And his father didn't either, and his father was the coach.
Yeah.
That's why
Pete was going to get his shots, and that's what mattered to Pete.
But he put on some show. Now,
yes, he did.
Understand Mike White is not trying to put on a show, but he's just exciting to watch. You know that game that he against Cincinnati? He was throwing the ball. I mean, he looked effortlessly. He was effortless. He looked like a Joe Montana. The way he went back to pass, picked out receivers in a West Coast offense kind of thing, and let them run with the ball. You know what I'm saying, Chris?
Thanks for the call, Richard. Joe Montana is a bit much. It was a bit much. He had a great, great first game, and he led the team on a touchdown drive in his second game before he went out of the game. And Mike White should play this week. Mike White should absolutely play this coming week. There's really no reason for the Jets not to play Mike White. None whatsoever. At least right now. Because there is zero downside. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Here's the real concern, okay? You're worried about the development of Zach Wilson and how it's going to get impacted if you bench Wilson and play Mike White, or if you use the excuse that Wilson is not 100% ready to go. No. There's a few things at work here that we need to understand. The Jets end up with a problem at the end of the year if Mike White plays well and Zach Wilson, they still feel, is the future of the organization. But it's a great problem to have. It's not you have two middle-of-the-road quarterbacks. You have two good quarterbacks. And let's just say for a second that you decided, you know, I like what White does enough where I'm going to roll with him. And you want to trade away Wilson. How many teams are going to line up to potentially trade for Wilson? There will be suitors lined up and ready to go. I make no bones about that. It's 100% accurate. Because how many teams were involved or interested in Wilson this past year? And wanting to move up. Plenty of them. So to me, if you're going to worry about that, that's not something to worry about. Because then if you want to decide, well, we're going to ride with Zach because we drafted him, how many teams do you think are going to want Mike White if he's played a very good second half of the year? You can find somebody that's interested in trading away a couple of picks and maybe some good ones to get a quarterback who they all of a sudden believe in. You know, what if Deshaun Watson's situation is not cleared up? How many teams are going to need quarterbacks? Carolina's going to need a quarterback. Washington's going to need a quarterback. Philadelphia's going to need a quarterback. There are plenty of teams that will need quarterbacks. So I absolutely believe that the opportunity will be there to move one of the two. And to get a high return on both. So that's problem one. And that would be a great problem to have. Problem two is that if we're going to argue that his development right now is all about playing right now, that's not totally accurate. Because we have to get out of our own way on this idea that every quarterback has to be on the same timeline. That's what we discuss now. Well, if the guy's not playing well right now, well, then he's not going to be the guy. People have already given up on Zach Wilson, which is just absolutely absurd. People think, well, this guy's not going to be the guy. God, look at what Justin Fields is doing. They're not all the same. Justin Fields was playing in front of 80,000 people at Georgia and 100,000 people at Ohio State and playing in big-time NCAA playoff games. Zach Wilson might take a little bit more time, but that's okay. Not every quarterback is on the same timeline to be great. Does that mean we have to wait 4 years for him to be very good? No. It absolutely doesn't. But guys, please remember a couple of things. Patrick Mahomes did not play at all until week 17 of his first year. So why exactly are we now going to put an expectation on Wilson that he has to be great by the end of his first year? Why is that? It's an unfair expectation to grade quarterbacks against other guys right now. And I'm not trying to defend him. All I'm saying is the discussions that are going to be had later in the year about having to move on from Wilson are way too premature and silly and baseless. I cannot remember a quarterback whose development was hampered by sitting. We all know that he needs reps. That doesn't mean he can't learn from watching. And then there's this. Doesn't it make sense to give your team the best chance to win? And if Mike White gives you the best chance to win, don't you have to play him right now? I think that's only fair to the other 52 guys. And yeah, when you don't have somebody that's playing that well, it's a much easier decision to make in Wilson's favor. But you have a younger team here. A team that needs to learn how to win. And so if he's going to give you the better chance to do that, it's more important in the overall future of the organization that they understand what winning is all about with somebody like White being the guy. Because if they take all the positives out of that and understand and take the intangibles out of that and become winning players, it's only going to benefit them. Getting a higher draft pick for the Jets, they've got two first-round picks. Having a top three pick is not most imperative right now. It's not. Not when you already drafted a quarterback. Yes, they have plenty of needs, but that's not the biggest one. You don't have to sit there and worry about getting a higher pick. That's just, at this point, foolhardy. The Jets need to win games. The fans deserve to see them win some games. If Mike White plays and he's giving you a better chance to win, or he plays and the offense is moving the ball a lot better, you owe it to everybody to play him. And if Wilson can't deal with that, isn't that more of a bigger problem? Like, doesn't that bother you more? It would bother me because it just says he's not mentally strong enough to take on this challenge. That does not strike me as to who Zach Wilson is. Not in the least. 800-919-3776. Lines are open. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. Over on Twitter, it's at Chris Carlin as well. By all means, hit us up there. We've got a couple of tweets from earlier in reference to the Mets and their GM situation, the fact that, you know, they can't find one. Jarve checking in. Sandy Alderson, it's not me, it's you. Exactly. That's exactly what Sandy Alderson is saying. It's the Mets, once again, pointing the blame elsewhere when they talk about wanting it to be GMs and executives that don't want all of the pressure of dealing with New York. Well, it has to do with the fans. It has to do with the real pressure that's involved here. Not everybody's a New York person. That might have been the issue for a couple of guys, but for everybody involved here? Is it the main issue? Absolutely not. Our buddy Carl Semkow checking in as well. Sandy Alderson, his track record, his nepotism, and his presumed seat at the table are deal breakers for any viable candidates who deserve free reign, plain and simple. It's not even about free reign. It's just about how much he's going to be involved. Like, is he going to be involved? Is he going to be right on top of you? As he said last year, it's about him not running and making decisions, but I fully expect to have a seat at the table. Why? If you don't want to be involved in it, don't be involved in it. It's just silly. Jacques in Rockland County. Jacques, what's going on, bud? How are you?
Hey, Carla, thanks for taking my call, buddy.
You got it, bud. What's up with you tonight?
Quick, oh, not much, man. Just listening to you. I think you're awesome, bro. I don't want to take anything away from you. You are a breath of fresh air on this radio station, so I just want you to know that real quick.
I appreciate that.
But no doubt. But to the Jets, right? So this Mike White situation. Now, I'm of the. I haven't given up on Zach Wilson, but I think we should just ride the wave, man. Like if Mike White comes in this weekend, he does 321, two touchdowns. Yo, Zach, have a seat. Just sit down. And if Mike does this throughout the rest of the season, let it go. Let Zach sit and chill and learn. And, I mean, I was of the, the few people that wanted Zach Wilson to sit, you know, coming in, you know, under the circumstances in New York. There was so much pressure. And I was one of those people that wanted him to sit early on. But, you know, no veteran quarterback, whatever, cool. So I think we should ride this situation with Mike White. Now, the other point with that Ira brought up earlier, I think we should also keep Mike White, being the fact that we don't know exactly what Zach Wilson has yet. Mm-hmm. And Mike White has shown that he can run the offense effectively, and it'd be a cheap option. You know, it never hurts to have
I get that. My problem is if White's too good this year, you got to make a decision between the two of them. Because then you're going to have it going back and forth next year and people screaming on both ends. You got to give whoever the guy is a fair chance. And if they decide we're going to ride this with Wilson for the long haul and he's our guy, I don't want him constantly looking over his shoulder. Competition's one thing. But when you have two really good quarterbacks, if they feel like White's going to be really good or White plays really well the rest of the season, you got to make a decision, in my estimation. Thanks for the call, Jacques. I appreciate you checking in. You got to figure it out from then. Because to me, then you are just asking to get in some trouble. You are just asking to create drama where there doesn't necessarily need to be drama. Brian Cashman earlier today at the GM meetings, I thought this was interesting, talking about a myriad of topics. But in case you didn't notice, Masahiro Tanaka's season just ended with Rakuten, I think it is, over in Japan. I think that's the company's name. And he pitched to an ERA of 3 this season. He was only 4-9, but like I said, really good ERA of 3. And he was asked if he thought the door was still open on a possible return for Tanaka.
Well, I can't speak specifically to him because I'm sure he's still under control there. I would just say that whatever's available in the open market is something we'll be forced to evaluate compared to what we already have, compared to what our payroll flexibility is. And so that's the job. So we'll look at all opportunities and then kind of prep them out and see how it makes a fit. If it's better than what we have, then we'll see if it can fit possibly or not.
On the back end, it would not be the worst idea. It truly would not, because think about what Tanaka was when he was here. He was somebody that you knew what you were going to get. And I know that there's always the concern about what's going on in his elbow. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about having guys that are going to be durable enough to pitch. And with Tanaka, you know what you're getting. You're getting 5 to 6 innings of solid baseball with a chance to win. And on the back end of the rotation, that's absolutely where I want to go. I want to know that I have that. I'm not saying it's a necessity. If they go out and get a much bigger pitcher this offseason, if, you know, as Scott Boras said, it's not about geography. It's about a chance to win for Max Scherzer. If they decide we want to go after Scherzer, great. Then it's not worth talking about. But if they're talking about depth on the back end, I don't know why you wouldn't discuss it. Here's Cashman asked about Anthony Rizzo returning.
Just had a conversation with his agent, you know, expressing the possibility of, you know, bringing him back. You know, he obviously was really good for us, we feel, both on the offensive side and on the defensive side and the leadership side. So, you know, he brings a lot of good things to the table. Now he's in the open market as a free agent, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people talking to him. And so I've had one conversation with the agent. I know he liked it here. I know we liked having him here, but, you know, nothing's gone past that.
One other discussion that we don't know if it's taken place yet, but it seems pretty clear that Matt Olson from the A's is available, and you have to go down that road if you can. And if it's a reasonable price, you know, Jim Bowden was saying that it's a combination of Gleyber Torres, Luke Voit, and Domingo Herman. That's a lot, but look at what Matt Wilson is. Matt Wilson's a big time player with 2 years left. I'd look very, very seriously at that. And it says more about Gleyber Torres at this point in his career, but I absolutely would look long and hard about doing that. And not even likely, I would do that. I absolutely would. Jarve's down in Australia checking in. Jarve, what's going on tonight, bud? How are you?
G'day, mate. No, it's lunchtime here, so I'm not at nighttime yet.
What do you got, man?
Just ringing to talk about the Yankees and this whole should we spend big dollars on a shortstop? Or I just think it's a better idea instead of spending $35 million a year on a shortstop, spread the money around, because Yankees don't have one problem. They have many problems. And I think they need to kind of spread the money around to fix those kind of things instead of trying to put square pegs in round holes like they've been doing for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the idea that they have quite a few things to get after. I agree with Andy earlier. I think the guy is Marcus Semien. It doesn't feel necessary to give Corey Seager $300 million.
Yeah, I agree with that. The thing, the concern I have with Marcus Semien is one of the reasons we want to get a new shortstop is because we've had bad defensive shortstops. And I remember Marcus wasn't very good when he was at shortstop, which is one of the reasons he moved to second base. I don't think we'd be getting an upgrade in defense from Gleyber Torres with Marcus Semien, and that's been my concern.
Yeah, listen, I get that. I do think that he is an upgrade considerably offensively at this point. And again, that speaks it speaks more to what has happened to Torres here. I'm good with Semien. If they want to go the big time shortstop route, I would almost prefer Correa to Seager at this point.
Yeah, well, when you're talking Seager, I'd like to look at Kyle Seager, his brother at third base. Like, we're not getting the production from the corners that we should be getting from first and third. And I think if we're trying to keep Gleyber Torres, which is his best spot, as second, then we're putting DJ over to first. And that's not the production you want from those spots. If you're taking the money that would be a Correa or a Corey Seager and put it into a Judge extension, a Matt Olson acquisition, a Kyle Seager at third, and a Starling Marte at center field, making Hicks a fourth outfielder, then you've got strength right across the board defensively in the lineup, and it's not just like one injury, you lose all that money if one of those shortstops goes down.
Yeah. Listen, Jarve, appreciate the call. With Marte, I'm very, very interested in him playing center field. Like, that, to me, is a guy that would really fit the Yankees pretty well. You know, he can play it. Defensively, he's going to do a really good job for you. The only problem is, who are you going to get to take the contract of Aaron Hicks at that point? Like, what are they going to do with him? Because they are stuck with Aaron Hicks, and that is a mess. You got to get somebody to take that contract. And it's still not unbearable, but that was kind of the whole point of Cashman giving him that money as well. If we want to trade him later, that contract's not horrible. It's not good. It's not good when he can't stay on the field. So much to discuss tonight. I want to read you this quote. It wasn't a quote. It's from a story in The Athletic. about Sandy Alderson's comments earlier today. Now, if you missed them, let's put those in context for you first and give you a chance to hear them. And in essence, it is really about where they stand right now, where the Mets stand as far as finding a president or finding a GM, and why Sandy thinks that they haven't been able to do that.
We are continuing the process, and we are continuing to talk to people. I don't want to give you a timeline. We've all already blown through what most people would say is a reasonable timeline, but we'll see what happens toward the end of the week. I will say this about the search. We've talked to a lot of people. Probably half the people are going to be here today. In some cases, you know, we haven't gotten permission. In some cases, I think people are comfortable where they are, whether it be a family situation or something professional. And in other cases, I think admittedly, there's a reluctance to come to New York, but I think it's mostly about New York and not about, you know, Steve or the organization or what have you. It's a big stage. Some people would just prefer to be elsewhere.
Look, you want to protect Steve Cohen, that's fine. The tweeting annoys candidates, that's fine. I think that right now, to suggest that it has more to do with people not wanting to come to New York and the big stage that is New York, and the pressure that's involved with being here, come on, that's a cop-out. That's a cop-out, and that's not the best PR in terms of not the best PR approach, if that was the thought. Well, we'll protect the owner here by blaming the fans. That's basically what you're doing. What's wrong with the expectations that people have to win? What's wrong with that? Well, this is from The Athletic and Tim Britton. The better reasons were enumerated throughout Alderson's comments Tuesday. Steve Cohen remains, at best, an unknown quantity as an owner. Alderson himself, combined with the presence of his son Bryn as an assistant GM, limits the autonomy of whoever takes the job. There's the possibility the Mets will attempt to hire a president of baseball operations again next winter, above whoever is hired this year. So think about all that. Like, we're surprised that you can't find a GM when Cohen's a concern. Okay, but he's only been here a year. And to me, you can work around that if you're the owner. If he wants to be heavily involved day to day, that's his prerogative. But you can't tell me this many people haven't been willing to take the money to do it. Secondly, Alderson and the presence of his son limits the autonomy of whoever takes the job. It's a bad look. It's a bad look. And for Bryn Alderson, I don't know anything about him. Not a thing. I haven't heard a negative thing, haven't heard a positive thing, haven't heard anything. So if he is somebody that is really good at his job and he's somebody that gives you, you know, everything that you're looking for in an up-and-coming executive, that's all great. The problem is more of what the perception is. And perception is reality. And the perception is nepotism, of course. There's no getting around that. So wouldn't it be better if he truly is a good baseball guy for him to get a chance to go do it somewhere else? And then, if you're a potential GM, oh, by the way, we're going to hire a president of ops next year who may not want to work with you. Oh, yeah, let me line right up for that job. Come on. Silly. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. So what keeps the Yankees from bringing in a big-time free agent shortstop? Well, something that Andy Martino talked about a little bit earlier. The fact that they are as high on their prospects as they are. So here's Brian Cashman on Anthony Volpe being a long-term solution at shortstop.
I know we can. I mean, our belief is that, yes, he could be a shortstop long-term, or because like many shortstop, we can move him around if necessary too. So, you know, we can swing over to second or third, but is he capable of staying at short? Yes. That's at least our current assessment.
And here's his opinion of his development so far.
Oh, he's fantastic. He had a very impressive year certainly caught the attention of the entire industry. And so, you know, really reinforces and justifies everything I heard from our amateur department when we drafted him. And so, you know, we're excited about his future.
So does that keep you from signing somebody for a 10-year deal? Like, if you're going to go to Corey Seager and he's going to be a third baseman within 2 years, why are you giving him a 10-year deal? You know, so I to me, that doesn't make a great statement about where you are. If you're going to go hand out that much money to one guy, $300 million after you already did with Cole, and yes, the Yankees have the money to spend, but that doesn't mean you necessarily should spend it there. Like, if I'm feeling that good about where my prize prospects at shortstop are, then maybe I don't necessarily need to give somebody a 10-year deal. Or maybe I'm trying to continue to build those guys up as great prospects and use them as trade chips later on. Nobody's better at hyping their guys than the Yankees, and you just heard it right there. I'm not saying Volpe's not the guy, but it wouldn't be the first time that we've heard that. Mike in Westchester is next on 98.7 ESPN. Mike, what's going on?
What's going on? I just had a few things to say. I really don't think the Yankees need a shortstop. Let's say they do bring someone in. Say it's Urshela third, the big-time free agent at short. They got Gleyber Torres at second. Then I think it's going to be Olsen or Rizzo. Where is LeMahieu going to play? I mean, I really think we should still focus on pitching.
I think it's more that where's Gleyber Torres going to be? I think if you're bringing in Olsen, probably a chance that you are sending Gleyber Torres in that deal to Oakland. So I think LeMahieu would be at second base in your scenario.
And I also think we ship out Luke Voit too, because I don't think he has like a role in the Yankees this upcoming season if we do acquire Olsen.
Yeah, look, I think that's all very, very fair. And thanks for the call. If I'm going to try to figure out what the best course of action is here, Matt Olsen is an easy decision to make. I mean, based on what that package is right now, if Jim Bowden's right, that's the one that he proposed, and that could actually get it done with Oakland, I would absolutely do that. Now, it's not like that's definitively on the table. But it is something to look at in that kind of package. If you're ready to move Gleyber Torres in a deal for Matt Olsen, as long as it's within reason, I'm absolutely in favor of that. That's from Kim Jones of the NFL Network on Odell. My sense is that Odell Beckham Jr. is and has been weighing options, will sleep on possible decision, which could come tomorrow. So unlikely that it would come tonight if you're reading it that way. Mike Giardi, also of NFL Network, says, I have no idea what Odell Beckham wants aside from targets, catches, and touchdowns, but I talked to a couple of important staffers in Foxborough and was told, quote, he's not vintage OBJ, but still plenty good and would work in this offense. So you have to believe that the Patriots are going to be involved on Beckham. And where else he ends up, who knows? It could be the reincarnation of the Randy Moss saving of his career as it went in New England. I'm frankly not counting on it. I'm not saying Odell's done, but Odell's done. No, I just don't know what's left. How much of it honestly has to do? I don't think for a second Baker Mayfield was purposely not throwing the ball to Odell Beckham. Sam's in Brooklyn next, 98.7 ESPN. Sammy, what's going on, bud?
What's going on, Chris? How you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I just have a question. We keep talking about OBJ, how, you know, he's going to weigh his options. He wants to go to contender. But why are we so certain that these contenders, like the Green Bay's, Arizona's, like, for them to bring on OBJ, he's coming mid-season, doesn't know the playbook, you're risking, you know, him being a head case, coming to that franchise. Why would we just assume that these teams even want him? You know, how do we even know those are even, like, viable options for OBJ to go to?
We don't.
Like, about Green Bay.
We don't. I think everything you've heard so far has basically been from Beckham's side about where he'd like to go. That doesn't mean he's going to have the opportunity to go there. Now, somebody's going to still, if what you hear there and what I just talked about and what I just read, if the talent is still there enough to help a team win, I mean, for Pete's sake, nobody was worse off than Antonio Brown, and Tom Brady wanted him, you know? So I absolutely believe that somebody who is a contender will want Odell Beckham there. Personally, I wouldn't want him near the team because I think he's a pain in the butt. I'm not going to be shocked at all if he ends up with Green Bay or with another contender. The only place where I don't think he's going to end up is with the Rams.
Right. Would you see OBJ go to a team that might be sub 500 if there's like no other options? Or would you?
If there's no other options, then yeah. If there's no other options. But I doubt, Sam, that's going to be the case. Thanks for the call. I think the options are going to be there for Odell Beckham. I'm not going to say there's going to be 15 teams, but can you see 6-7 teams lined up for him trying to get him? Yeah, potentially. Potentially. I could see that. How about Brian in West Palm Beach? You've been very patient, Brian. What's going on, bud? How are you tonight?
All right. Can you hear me good?
I can. Thank you.
What you said before, I totally agree. I'm a Yankee fan and Giant fan. If it's you can get Matt Olson for Gleyber Torres, Luke Voit, and Domingo Germán, I would jump on it in a second. That's like a no-brainer. You know, I've been a Yankee fan since, I don't know, 8 years old, 1965. Also, you go after, in the package, you try to bring in the catcher Murphy because they need a catcher because Sanchez is done. He's a terrible defensive catcher, and he doesn't hit for any kind of average. And you bring him in, and you see they had a couple of prospects, and you get him and Sean Manaea. What do you think?
I mean, listen, Manaea, I think, is going to be available. It sounds like, from what they said today, from what their GM said, not being the other guy whose name is escaping me at the moment, like basically everybody's on the table right now to discuss. As far as Sean Murphy, did not have a great season this year offensively, was much better the last couple of years in very limited action, but the guy played 120 games this year. And if you're good with just having a catcher who is defense only or is primarily defense, then I'm good with that. But I think right now, with the A's, everything's on the table. Everything appears to be on the table because they're trying to get out of Oakland.
Chris, I would do that in a second. It's like Sanchez, what's his view? He's a terrible defensive catcher.
But I don't think the A's are going to want Sanchez back. What are you going to do with Sanchez?
Okay, then you trade him to the Miami Marlins, who could use another hitter. And years ago, Miami would have traded Sanchez straight up for Realmuto.
Yeah, but that, you got to remember, that's 3 years ago. That's a point when Sanchez, and thanks for the call, had not become what he is right now, which is damaged goods to a degree. Yes, they would have traded JT Realmuto at the time, but that's fine. They didn't do it. The Yankees wanted no part of that, and here they are. Jimmy's in Yonkers. He's next, 98.7 ESPN. Jimmy, what's up, baby? Jimmy!
Hey, what's up? How you doing? Love the show.
Thank you, buddy. How are you?
So what I want to say is that I think it's sad to say about OBJ and done. He's probably been finished since New York. Now, the guy drops critical passes all the time. We cannot count on him when it's important. I'm done with the flashiness. I could care less about that. I need someone who's going to make plays, who's going to give us first downs, who we can count on, like Antonio Brown. So we don't.
So you think Antonio Brown is better than Odell Beckham?
100 times. 100 times better.
I don't think he's 100 times better. I don't think that's fair. But I am curious as to what Beckham is going to look like in whatever this next life is and wherever this next life is. Is he going to reinvigorate himself? You are correct in saying one thing. He has been nowhere near the player he was his first 3 years with the Giants. Good talk. We'll see you out there. Thanks, Jimmy, for the call. Appreciate that. 800-919-3776. Lines are open. By all means, fire away. You know, I'm not going to get that wrapped up. And with Beckham at this point, I think he's still a player that is going to be able to help somebody. I just don't see where he's going to be the next Randy Moss coming from the Raiders going to the Patriots. Maybe I'll be wrong about that. I don't know. In case you missed it, Aaron Rodgers today walked back some of his comments as he popped back onto the Pat McAfee show. I'll tell you what, McAfee, he has gotten, I don't know if they're paying him or what that deal is, but whatever it is, he continues to get massive buzz out of having Rodgers on. So God bless him for that. But here are some of Rodgers' comments from earlier today on the McAfee show and what he had to say in reference to his comments of last week.
I respect everybody's opinion. I don't only talk to yes people or people who, you know, allow me to, you know, to live in an echo chamber of my own thoughts and beliefs. I'm a lifelong student. I love learning and acquiring information and talking to people with different point of views than I have, so that I can understand situations and their feelings better. That's how you grow. That's how you learn. That's how you become either stronger in the points you believe in, or how you adjust your own belief system. It's only through question and study and conversation. So again, there's obviously going to be stories, but I'm not going to chase these stories down. I'm just going to get back to doing what I do best, and that's playing ball.
Okay, so he's getting back to that, and he said that he was, if he had felt that some of his comments, or if others had felt that his comments last week were misleading, or original comments were misleading back in the summer about him getting immunized, that he, quote, takes full responsibility for that.
I'm an athlete. I'm not an activist. So I'm going to get back to doing what I do best, and that's playing ball. I shared my opinion. It wasn't one that was come to frivolously. It involved a lot of study and what I felt like was in my best interest for my body. But further comments, you know, I'm going to keep between myself and my doctors and about any of those things after this interview.
In other words, don't bother coming at me with questions tomorrow when I have to meet the media in Green Bay for the first time. This is going to be it. This is all I'm saying about it. Whatever, man. Honestly, whatever. We know he lied. He knows he lied. He just didn't want to admit that he lied. And at this point, it's not even about the lying. It's not even about whether or not he got it. It's about the fact that, and trust me when I tell you, I don't want to get into a whole thing, but it's about the fact that he did not follow the protocols that are necessary when you make that decision. And that, frankly, is exactly the problem. And he didn't seem to care about it. So, good for Aaron. You get to walk back your comments and everything you said last week, which was a half an hour of you going on and on and on and on and people wanting to cancel you and all that. There wasn't a whole lot of that today. It's a story in the Post that he was actually surprised that it caused this massive blow-up. Really, dude? Like, at some point, if you are the critical thinker that you talk about being, you should understand that you're Aaron Rodgers, and when you talk about this, there's going to be a massive, massive response. I got to listen to one more. This is, I guess he was asked by McAfee, who else he spoke with besides Joe Rogan.
I definitely talked with about a dozen friends of mine who dealt with COVID, and they all were very helpful in different ways, Joe being one of them. But again, that's the society we're in. Again, I have no judgment. This is, you know, hate is not going to bring us out of this pandemic. It's going to be connecting and love. And I'm not going to hate on anybody that has said things about me. You know, I believe everybody is entitled to their opinion. I always will believe that.
Well, there you go. 800-919-3776. I'm just, frankly, I am so sick of Aaron Rodgers' drama. It's just so self-inflicted all year long. So sick of it. He's an amazing football player. I'm so tired of hearing all of his drama. Just dumb.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.